Father, thank you for the opportunity to be able to hear Dave be talking about what you've put on his heart. And we just pray, Lord, that you'd help him and help us this morning to be able to receive what you've got. And just ask you to bless this time together. Amen.
Amen. Thanks, Andy. Always good to be here. The other night I was visiting with a group of church leaders in a church not too far away from here. And one of the things we're working towards is to see them employ or release a full-time leader within the next 12 months. And in the leader's wisdom, they went round to all the home groups and said, what does this church need? And it was in the context of employing a full-time leader. And they discovered that the church needed a pastoral evangelist who was theologically trained, who could preach well, could communicate well with young people, could release people into their ministries, etc. So I said to them, a bit cynically, if Superman was available, would he want to come to a little market town? And sometimes we have this sort of idea of what does the church need? And if we can only get, you know, this all singing, all dancing, prophetic, pastoral, evangelistic leader, then all will be well with the church. And I don't generally think the church needs that. I think the church does need men and women who are pastoral, who are prophetic, who are evangelistic. But what brings change to the church isn't structure, it's attitudes and response. And I've been challenged recently, just reading through some of Mark's gospel, just at the number of times it has this little phrase that Jesus was moved with compassion. In just a couple of examples, in the feeding of the 5,000, it says that that a vast crowd was there as Jesus stepped from the boat. This is in Mark 6, verse 34. And he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And so he taught them many things. In Mark 8, there's another example of Jesus feeding. This time it's 4,000. And it says in 8 verse 2, I feel sorry for these people. I have compassion for these people, depending on what translation you use. They have been here with me for 3 days and have nothing left to eat. And what we see in over a dozen occasions in the gospel is that it just says, and Jesus moved with compassion and then he performed a miracle. And even in some of the stories that Jesus told that depict something of his father's love, in the parable of the prodigal son in Luke 15, when the father sees the son coming back, it says in Luke 15 that the father moved with compassion, went and embraced the son. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, it says that the Samaritan moved with compassion. And I suppose what I'm seeing and feeling is that what the church needs isn't so much good structures. It needs men and women who are moved with compassion. Because what I see is a process. That compassion produces passion, and passion produces action. And if we're going to see any change in the church, it's men and women who allow their hearts to be stirred with compassion and get moved by it. Now, I don't know all that much of Ruth's story, but what I know, and just in a few conversations with her, Ruth has got compassion for orphans in Romania. And the process I've seen is that that compassion has produced passion, and there's action. Something is happening. And again, just one or two conversations with Anna, who's not here today, but, you know, obviously, from time in Nepal, her heart was moved with compassion. And what I sense from her now is a passion so that she's doing things. And I think one of the dangers of church life is that we so often put things on the role of leaders that sometimes that can stop us from actually saying, what am I passionate about? Have I got compassion for anybody? Because if I don't have compassion, I won't have passion. And if I don't have passion, nothing will happen. And my feeling about leadership is that church leadership, or the leader of the church, their role isn't to do it all. It's to make sure things get done. But if you were to ask me what I think the role of a leadership team in a church is, I believe it's to create an environment so that each person has an opportunity to grow and develop. And so one of the things that I feel I'm responsible for in the sphere where I work is we've got many men and women who've got a real heart to serve the poor. And so my role as a church leader is to create an environment where that can happen, where they can express their compassion and their passion, and they know that they're not in conflict with the leadership or the church strategy and priorities, because I see my role is to see the men and women that God has given me care for to actually identify their passion. But sometimes passion never happens because we've never... that's a generalisation, but because we don't allow ourselves to be moved with compassion. There's a book called The Age of Unreason. I don't know if any of you have read it. It's written by a guy called Charles Handy, and he makes this assumption that it's the unreasonable people who change the world, because the reasonable person just accepts it. That's how it is. In our city, there is poverty. In our city, there is crime. In our city, that's life. Let's just accept it. And his whole argument is reasonable people don't change anything. It's the unreasonable, the person who says, why is there crime? There shouldn't be crime. Why is there poverty? Why is there so much relational breakdown? It's the unreasonable person who won't accept the status quo that actually changes things. And if I leave nothing with you today, it's just this sort of, I hope that we will allow ourselves to be touched by God's heart, so that something of the compassion of Jesus can touch us. So that will put a passion in us. I think with compassion, sometimes with the busyness of life, or sometimes our own issues, or sometimes just the sort of donor fatigue, we end up being afraid to feel compassionate about things. And can I say, when I'm talking, please, and I often say this and it seldom happens, I'm very happy for you to interrupt, to ask a question, to disagree, to give an example. Please feel very free to do that, because I can see the way you're sitting to listen, and I'm up here to talk. And we all know that's not the best way to learn, is it? You know, if you want to learn, if you disagree with me, please say so. Because, and again, I may well have said this before, what I realise more and more is that, if Paul can say to the church in Corinth, I know in part, then Dave Day, who hasn't quite had the third heaven experience yet, knows even more in part. And so I don't have all the answers. I've got lots of questions. So I don't promise to be right in everything, and you can disagree with me, and it's quite a healthy thing to do that. But I want to provoke you, and if you want to challenge, interrupt, I won't be in the slightest bit offended. So please do. Or, I mean, whether this is putting you on a spot, date, Andy.
Are you going to talk about how we can let ourselves be moved by compassion?
Yeah, I'm hoping to. It's sort of roughly there, but. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll start with that. But I don't know whether it would be appropriate or even putting you in a spot, Ruth. What made you first want to get involved with orphans in Romania? Would you be prepared to say?
Well, I think what we heard about their situation, my family has had everything they've needed, and these had nothing. Mm.
Yeah.
I remember one day we were.
Can I just put this to you?
Yeah, let me get that there.
Right. And while you're doing this, I'll just write down Andy's question to make sure I try and answer it.
The others in the party that I was with, the ladies especially, were going around and picking up these little children who were in their cuts, really kind of wet and dirty and everything. And then one of them said to me, pick one up. And I mean, it wasn't because he was wet and dirty, but I knew I wouldn't be able to put him down again. Mm. And I just, that was when it came in, I think, that I just, I just needed to do something. I felt as if I needed to do something, yeah.
If it's not a rude question, which it is, how old were you when that happened, Ruth?
About 65.
I didn't think you were that old, no?
Well, thank you.
So it's not shaped by age. It's, you know, moving, touching, in a sense getting your hands dirty. But I know, and don't know all that Ruth has done, but from that compassion, there's been passion and there's been action. But what stops us from being compassionate? I think sometimes it is just we're overwhelmed by things. You know, we've got some folk in our church who work with Haiti. When it happened, it was, you know, all news, solidly, constantly in front of us. And then there was another earthquake in Chile, so Haiti got low down the list. And you think, gosh, what can we do there? We took an offering for this. Do we take an offering for that? And the danger can be that in our world, there are so many things that we need to respond to. Sometimes we just feel overwhelmed and say, I can't, and we step back a bit. Sometimes I think our own personal struggles make us feel inadequate. And I think if you're like me and many people I know, when there's an opportunity to respond, a lot of things come to our mind. I'm too old or too young. I've got these responsibilities. I need to do this job to pay the mortgage. I can't take a step of faith. Ralph was saying at the start about taking steps of faith as a church. And sometimes what stops us is saying, if I really wanted to go where my heart was, it would be a step too far. Because sadly, for most of us, we imbibe the culture of our society more than we realise. And imbibing the culture is the opposite of stepping out in faith. I think sometimes too we can feel that we don't have our act together. Who is me? I've got my own problems. If I can get myself sorted, then I will sort out this situation. But I love Isaiah 58. The people of God have been complaining. They feel as though they're just praying and the prayers bounce back from the ceiling. And they say, what good is fasting when you keep on fighting and quarrelling, says God. This kind of fasting, or fasting, I'm from Birmingham, so it's fasting. But you're, is it fasting or fasting? In fasting, yeah. Fasting. All right. But whatever it is, says God, this kind of fasting will never get you anywhere with me. You humble yourselves by going through the motions of penance, bowing your heads like a blade of grass in the wind. You dress in sackcloth and cover yourself with ashes. Is this what you call fasting? Do you really think this will please the Lord? No, the kind of fasting I want calls you to be free, calls you to free those who are wrongly imprisoned, to stop oppressing those who work for you. Treat them fairly and give them food. I want you to share your food with the hungry, and to welcome poor wanderers into your home. Give clothes to those who need them, and do not hide from relatives who need your help. If you do these things, your salvation will come like the dawn. Yes, your healing will come quickly. And what I find interesting in that is there's been no talk earlier about a need for healing. But what God says if you can look outside of yourself, if you can start to reach out, then your healing will come. And so often, I've said, and I know others have said, if only I can get my act together, then I can do it. And what God says is, if you can start to reach outside of yourselves, then your healing will come. Greg. Yeah.
I just think it's a bit more complicated than that. Because Jesus,
do you want to use the mic?
Yeah. Sorry, it's just something that's on my mind at the moment. Yeah. So Jesus said, be in the world, but not of it.
Yeah.
So perhaps we should go to Sunday football matches.
Mm.
Is that what it means? Because we need to be in the world, doing things in the world, but not in a worldly way. I just feel there's a danger in making a statement like that we say, right, you know, I will therefore not imbibe the culture and step outside of it and then actually become fairly useless in the culture in doing things and bringing people to Jesus, because they say the culture then looks at us and says, well, that person's strange. They don't, you know, do the same things as I do. They don't act in the same way. It's almost like they're a foreigner.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just the way you said one is the opposite of the other. Yeah. I just think there's more things at play there than just the two things.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. I think what I was thinking is my attitude to finance, for example, is more shaped by a Western culture than faith. So I think I've got to provide a mortgage, I've got to do this, I've got to, you know, leave an inheritance for my kids, I've got to make sure I've got a pension. And the danger is imbibing some of those things stops us taking a risk. I would agree with you about culture. It was very interesting, not sure if this is totally related, but it speaks to me. Every Sunday morning when I go to our church meeting in Bristol, I go past a massive car boot sale. You know, it's sort of 10 o'clock in the morning, hundreds of cars there. Last Sunday, I had to speak in a church in Brighton. So I left home about 6:15, and I drove past this car boot sale area at 6:30, and it was already heaving. And I thought, gosh, what does it say about our culture that people will give themselves to... It's 6 o'clock in the morning, car boot sale. Far more people go to car boot sales than to church services. And yet our hope is that people will mysteriously walk in through the door led by the Holy Spirit on a Sunday morning. And maybe even saying, well, if that's where our culture is, you see what Jesus did, as John says, the word became flesh, or as Eugene Peterson says, he moved into our neighborhood. And he came and identified, lived amongst us, not to be shaped by the culture, but embracing the culture, tried to change it. And I think the danger is we can have this divorce. And whether we would be more effective if we gave free coffees at a car boot sale and had some conversations, you know. But what I was thinking more was, what stops me moving out in faith is a sense I've got this income, I've got these responsibilities, I've got this mortgage, and it's almost a step too far sometimes for us to break out of that. But back to Isaiah, you know, the people of God, they wanted a breakthrough. And God said, you've got to start looking outside yourself. And if you start to do that, healing will come. And I, my basic feeling is that... the more time we have to assess our problems, the more problems we realise we've got. Or the more people who are on hand to sort out our problems, the more problems we can find. And what Isaiah says is, if we can start to look outside ourselves and see something of God's world and God's heart and the poor and the needy, then maybe we can see healing come to us. Whereas healing was never raised as an issue. But God said, there is a need for healing. But the healing will come outside. And what I love, just hearing Ruth's story, at 65, she was stirred up. And she touched by compassion. A friend of ours who was a missionary in Brazil, I realised David's parents were here, missionaries in Brazil. She came to me several years ago and said, I'm 70 in 2 months' time. I need a challenge. So I said, well, we're just about to try and develop a children's village for AIDS orphans in Zambia. Would you like to go? Yes, please. And so she spent 2 years there because over the years, and a nurse who'd been a missionary in Brazil, and she'd allowed God to touch her heart with compassion. And so a bit like the Caleb spirit, you know, I'm 70, I need a challenge. And it's those people who change the world. And what I want is that our churches never become so self-centered that we end up restricting people rather than releasing people. So in our home group in Bristol, we've got four women who are on the full-time staff of a project called 125, which is an amazing charity in Bristol, working with women who sell sex on the streets, seeing some great change, seeing a lot of heartache. But I'm coming to see more and more that one of my prime roles is just to be a support for people who, out of their compassion and passion, are doing things that I could never do, who are reaching people that I could never reach. But if they ever felt that what they were doing was in conflict with the church, we end up then with a struggle which is helpful to nobody. And sadly, I have had, in fact, some of these women before they joined our church said, we really struggle because we love our church, but we don't feel it supports us because we don't fit into the mould. And what I want to see is a church that's full of men and women who have allowed God to touch their heart. So out of that compassion comes a passion, and out of that passion will come action. But if I as a church leader ever think, well, that will conflict with our strategies, then we're not actually releasing people. And I do think that sometimes we, through our own issues, through our own problems, sometimes we think, I can't allow myself. And I know that many of you here will know something of our family story, and we've been so grateful for many who have prayed with us through it. We, very long story short, and I'm sorry I've said this before probably, we had to go through 7 court cases because of some false allegations brought against some of our family, which was very expensive. I realised I should have been a lawyer when I spoke to the lawyer and he told me what his hourly charges were. But what we found again and again was, we felt the challenge from God was, are you prepared to be generous even when we could easily justify not being generous? And that was quite a challenge to us because we felt there'd been injustice, we felt life's not fair and all that. But the constant challenge from God to us was, are you prepared to look outside your own situation? A bit like Isaiah 58, are you prepared to give even though naturally speaking we could justify not giving? And I think for many of us the challenge is, we can see lots of reasons why we shouldn't move with compassion. We see lots of reasons why we shouldn't be generous. And in being generous, time is more important than money. You know, are we willing to give our time? And all of those reasons stop us, I think, from breaking out and moving in faith. Did that answer your question? Or have I taken so long you've forgotten what the question was? That's my plan, you know. Take so long answering your question, you forgot what the...
the thing is that it's like... You said that you can shut yourself off from being compassionate. Mm. And I wondered what switched people on. It's like when Ruth was saying, you know, I've been in situations, like when I went to Uganda about 5 years ago, there were situations there that I think other people would have gone... would have really been hit with compassion, and I think I probably missed it too.
Mm.
And I saw all sorts of stuff, and I've had to think about it since, and I'm wondering how I could be more attuned to picking up or show more, you know, just what can I do that when, if I'd been in Ruth's situation, I'd have gone, nice children, maybe, you know, they're good and they've got problems and that, but I don't really want to... And I'd be switching off because I didn't want to deal with it. So how do you actually switch yourself on to deal... to get the compassion to flow is really what my question was.
I think I've put another side of that coin. Because I see a passion with you about what you're doing with the bus and things like that, you know. So it's not as, I don't think, and I can check with Philippa, she can put me right, I don't think that you're not passionate about things. It's just perhaps that wasn't your thing. No, if there was nothing...
There are different things coming up in communities that I'm having to wrestle with. So I know that the bus could be a given, but I'm just trying to think for other people as well here. You know, how do we say what, how we switch stuff off, but how do we switch stuff on? Is there anything we could do?
There's timing coming to us as well. You know, who's to say God would switch something on you in 10 years' time when it was well established and he'll give you a focus somewhere else? So the timing
issue.
The thing I would say is that you ask God for it. Because it comes from his love in us.
Yeah, we sometimes pray... Lord, touch our heart with the things that touch your heart. But there will be some who maybe maternally respond in a different way, say to children, than to others whose whose response would be a different sphere. I think I'd be concerned if you or others weren't stirred up about anything.
I don't feel very compassionate.
Call yourself a Christian.
Yeah. But I think it's getting in that place where we can be praying, Lord, touch our heart with that which touches your heart. And because the heart of God is so vast, it won't all be the same. So it might be orphans, it might be poverty. We've got a woman in our church who's really stirred up to in the whole debt counselling thing. Now, I can see a need for that, but I don't feel stirred up about it, but she is passionate about it. We've got some folk who are really passionate about green issues. And I know I should be, but I'm not there yet. But I don't want to restrict them. I want to release them. Simon?
On that, the person who's passionate about debt and the person who's passionate about green issues, do they have the skills in order to do something about that as well? Because what I always wonder with the timing thing is that partly it's you can become passionate about something like that once God's given you the skills in another field, that you can then have an effect.
Yeah.
Whereas if you became passionate 10 years earlier, probably couldn't
make an
effect. Is that the case? Are these people that have the skills to deal with the thing that they've then become, that God's given them the passion for?
Well, I tend to think that some people are initiators, and that often isn't everybody, but we can all respond. And I think with all of these areas, we just need a few people who will initiate. But if you've got a heart or a concern or a burden, whatever you want to call it, for a specific area, but you're not an initiator, then, something else I think as a church leader that we can do is try and network. Because if you've got a concern for debt, for example, I know a few churches around that have got people who are actively involved. So I think we can help network so that people can learn or can serve. Because I do realise in what I'm saying, there will be some who say, I could never start that. But there will be some who could say, well, I could respond. I've got a heart for that. I can't see myself initiating, but can I serve somebody in doing it? And again, with this project working with women who sell sex on the streets in Bristol, there are some folk involved who are really working hard face-to-face with the women involved. There would be some who've got a major compassion for them, but don't feel that they can connect, so they serve with baking, a whole variety of things, admin, etc. So they're fulfilling something of their heart, but they know their strengths and weaknesses and limitations. And I think sometimes in a church family, we can network and connect people so that for some it can be a learning process, but for others we can be releasing people. And I think when I talk about passion, I'm not talking about, often we think of a passionate person as being a raving extrovert, you know, who enthuses and or preaches and exhorts. I think passion is something that drives us. And you can be a passionate introvert who can feel a bit disqualified because you haven't got the extrovert tendencies. I know we've got one guy at home who's a passionate preacher. And everybody says, oh, it's so passionate. And sometimes the introverts can feel, gosh, I'm not like that, therefore I'm not passionate. And I'm not talking about that sort of passion, though if you've got that temperament, your passion will be very infectious. But passion is that which drives me. Now, Jesus set his face like a flint. There was something that drove him. Jesus, who for the joy that was set before him endured, there was a passion that drove him. That gave him a sense of purpose and call and meaning. And this isn't dependent on temperament. It's dependent on what we allow God to do in our hearts. I think with action, just a couple of thoughts on this. Don't wait until you feel ready. How many of you here who are married with children said, let's wait until we can afford it? You did. Who didn't? But I think sometimes it's the step of faith that makes us ready. Yeah.
In terms of serving,
yeah.
You know, sort of doing something about compassion, how much do you find in your church that sometimes people come to you and sometimes you go to people and say, we think you should be trying this. Where's the balance in that?
I personally prefer people to provoke and say, we've got a heart for this. And the danger is when you talk about your church, you can make it sound like the most wonderful place in the world, but, you know, we've got our heartaches and problems and issues we're working through. But I would generally prefer, and I think to do it, we have got to create an environment where it can happen. I want people to come to me and say, I've got a real heart for. So a few months ago, a couple of guys came to me and said, we've got a growing heart for France. What should we do about it? They were coming partly because they wanted to be accountable, partly because they knew that I'd got some connections in France. But when people take the initiative, for them, it's a very positive step of faith. I think the other side of that coin is there are some people who, because of their own feelings of unworthiness, I couldn't do anything, for example, just need some prodding. So what we will often do, just last month I was visiting Zambia, where a woman from BCF has been working in a clinic in a really rural part, doing an amazing work. A lot of midwifery nursing, a lot of AIDS work. She's 67, desperately in need of help. So I can come back and say, Ruth Wallace is doing a fantastic job. She needs somebody to go and help her for a period of time. So I can, when I've got the opportunity, present opportunities. But to me, it makes far more sense to people come to me and say, Dave, we've got a real heart for this. And I've probably mentioned this before, but we've got a couple, I'm sure I have, who've got a heart for the gay community. And so they came to me, they talked about their concern, the things they wanted to do, why they wanted to be involved. So what I could say to them is, we will support you in that. I will contact all the leaders I know in the Bristol area to find out if there are other people with a similar heart and burden, so we can be networking. So we don't want to reinvent the wheel. We don't want to be just doing something that all ends up almost in opposition to another church. So my role was to say, with my contacts, I can see if there's a networking that would be helpful for you. They took the initiative, which made me realise I knew they were serious, but then I had the opportunity to ask other churches. The sad thing was, there wasn't one of the church who expressed any interest to be involved, but that's another question. So with the action, the thing that I often say, and I often ask myself, is what is in my heart and what is in my hand? Because there is a principle that Jesus taught, that if we're faithful in small things, he will give us more things. And maybe for some, the small thing for you, maybe you've been stirred up about AIDS work or the work that Anna's involved in Nepal, etc. And maybe at this stage, what's in your hand and your heart is just to start praying. But with that praying, opening up your heart for God to move more. And then how can we as a church support and release and not feel in conflict with those with a heart to do? So what does the church need? I don't think this particular church I was with the other night needs a great deal of expositional Bible teaching, because most of them were middle-aged Christians who've been Christians many years, who probably heard more sermons than they know what to do with. And sometimes we say we need more Bible teaching. I think what we need is to put some of that into action. And to me, churches, men and women, have been touched with the compassion of Jesus. And that has produced a passion that produces action. And what our church needs are men and women who are open for God to touch them. And the areas God touches might be Romania, it might be the villages, it might be Chippenham, a whole variety of things. But I want to see each person in the church I'm responsible for given the opportunity to express what God has put in their heart and support them to do what God is putting in their hand. It's the unreasonable that change the world. It's the people who say, I'm not going to accept this. Somebody once said, it was Oswald Chambers, sometimes we pray or say that prayer changes things. Sometimes what prayer does is it changes people, and people change things. And I want us to be that worshipping community changed by the power and the love of God so that we can change things. Thank you.